What if the person sleeping beside you was planning your destruction? On a Missouri morning, Nick Dunn returns home to find his living room trashed, his wife missing, and blood smeared across the kitchen floor. Within hours, he becomes America's most hated man, the husband who killed his perfect wife. But this isn't just another true crime story. This is a surgical dissection of marriage itself, a thriller that asks, how well do we really know the people we love? Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl sold over 20 million copies not because it's a mystery, but because it exposes something terrifying about intimacy, that love and hatred aren't opposites, but neighbors, separated by the thinnest of walls. Nick and Amy meet at a Brooklyn party and fall into enviable love. She's the inspiration for her parents' best-selling Amazing Amy books. Brilliant, beautiful, wealthy. He's a charming Midwesterner with writerly ambitions. Their early years shimmer with romantic gestures, elaborate treasure hunts, lazy Sundays, summer sailing. But fairy tales don't survive recessions. When both lose their magazine jobs in 2008, their personas crack. Nick grows resentful of Amy's trust fund while refusing household tasks. When his mother is diagnosed with terminal cancer, he announces they're moving to Carthage, Missouri, a dying river town. Amy uses her last inheritance to buy Nick and his sister a bar, then watches her cosmopolitan life dissolve. The move exposes what New York concealed. They don't actually like each other. Nick retreats to the bar, avoiding his demanding wife and dying mother. Amy grows bitter and controlling, her perfectionism suffocating. When she suggests a baby, Nick recoils. Their fifth anniversary approaches like a deadline neither wants to meet. The morning Amy vanishes, everything points to Nick. Overturned furniture suggests a struggle. Blood in the kitchen suggests violence. But it's Nick's behavior that seals his fate. He can't account for several hours, seems oddly detached, and smiles during a press conference. Cable news replays his killer smile endlessly. The evidence mounts. $212,000 in debt, a massive life insurance policy on Amy, neighbors reporting violent arguments. Amy's best friend, Noelle, reveals Amy feared Nick might kill her and that she was pregnant. The final blow? Amy's diary, chronicling years of abuse escalating to violence. The last entry? Chills. This man might kill me. Ellen Abbott, a Nancy Grace-style TV host, leads the media prosecution. Nick becomes the villain in a national morality play, the ungrateful husband who murdered his pregnant wife. When police find the murder weapon, a punch puppet handle with Amy's blood, his arrest seems inevitable. America has already convicted him. Then Flynn detonates her narrative bomb. Amy is alive, orchestrating everything. The fake diary, staged crime scene, pregnancy test using her friend's urine, strategic credit card debt. She spent a year planning Nick's destruction after discovering his affair with student Andy. Simple divorce wasn't punishment enough. "I'm so much happier now that I'm dead," she announces. Technically missing, soon to be presumed dead. Amy's revenge targets the exhausting performance she maintained as the cool girl. In the novel's most famous passage, she eviscerates this impossible female ideal. Being the cool girl means I am a hot, brilliant, funny woman who adores football, poker, dirty jokes, and burping, who plays video games, drinks cheap beer, loves threesomes and anal sex, and jams hot dogs and hamburgers into her mouth like she's hosting the world's biggest culinary gangbang while somehow maintaining a size 2. Amy pretended to be this fantasy woman to win Nick's love, suppressing her actual personality, demanding, opinionated, complex. When she showed her true self, Nick's love evaporated. He started an affair with someone younger, easier, less complicated. In Amy's calculus, Nick killed her soul, which should be a crime. Her frame-up isn't just revenge, it's justice by her own moral code. The anniversary treasure hunt becomes a sadistic tour of Nick's betrayals, each clue leading to places he'd been with Andy. Amy's escape seems perfect. Cash, fake ID, remote Ozarks cabin. She becomes Ozark Amy. Weight gained, hair dyed, forgettable. Then drifters rob her money belt. Desperate, she contacts Desi Collins, a wealthy ex-boyfriend obsessed with her for decades. Fabricating abuse stories, she secures refuge at his luxurious lake house, only to discover she's traded one prison for another. Desi monitors her food, dictates her appearance, makes sexual advances. His delicate bullying traps her completely. Meanwhile, Nick hires celebrity attorney Tanner Bolt. During his televised declaration of love, Andy simultaneously exposes their affair, destroying any redemption. As arrest looms, Nick finally grasps Amy's brilliance. He must convince the world his missing wife is a calculating psychopath who framed him, an impossible task. Watching Nick's interview from Desi's lake house, Amy makes her move. She murders Desi by slitting his throat during sex, stages a rape scene, and appears 40 days later covered in blood with rope marks on her wrists. Surveillance cameras capture her rescue. As reporters swarm, Nick embraces his blood-soaked wife while whispering, "You fucking bitch." The narrative transforms instantly. Nick becomes the wronged husband, Amy the kidnapping survivor. Despite inconsistencies, media, police, and public accept her story. Detective Boney remains skeptical but lacks evidence. In private, Amy calmly admits everything. She returned because his public declaration touched her. When Nick threatens exposure, she delivers her ultimatum. She's preserved his semen and can claim he forced her return. "I'm the bitch who makes you better," she tells him. Nick contemplates murder but realizes he's trapped. Leaving means public condemnation for abandoning his traumatized wife. In a disturbing realization, Nick acknowledges that Amy brings out both his best and worst self, that any normal relationship would feel bland by comparison. The couple establishes an uneasy détente based on mutual manipulation. Nick pretends to love Amy while secretly working with Detective Boney. Amy secures a book deal, ensuring Nick must publicly support her narrative or face consequences. The balance shifts when Amy reveals she's pregnant, using Nick's stored sperm from fertility treatments. Nick realizes he cannot abandon his child to Amy, effectively trapping him forever. As Amy observes, that's marriage, the give and take of sleep and sex and spite and tenderness. Amy reflects, love should have conditions. Unconditional love is undisciplined. It's disastrous. She's successfully reassembled her husband, though troubled by his parting comment, "Because every morning you have to wake up and be you." Flynn refuses conventional resolution. Instead, she suggests Nick and Amy might be perfectly matched in their dysfunction. Their toxic relationship continues, not despite their mutual understanding of each other's worst qualities, but because of it. Behind closed doors, they wage psychological warfare. For the world, they perform the perfect marriage. The novel concludes not with justice, but with equilibrium, a marriage sustained by mutual manipulation and tacit agreement to maintain their fiction. In Flynn's dark vision, the greatest deception isn't what we show the world, but what we tell ourselves about the compromises we make to survive.